Spiegel and Holmes. Afternoons on the Score.
Your guys' show starting is the beginning of a new era.
So glad you guys are able to team up together for the afternoon show.
All right, well, we navigated that pretty well. I was worried. I'm always worried. Yeah, that's my bit.
My bit is good vibes.
I think those are good vibes, babe.
Who would dare interrupt me during my midday fast? Yeah. Oh, that's the Spiegel and Holmes show.
I might swerve in that corner.
Whoa. See Matt Spiegel over there.
We love the Coach Spiegs.
Are you noticing that?
Well, I will tell you, Spiegs, if you've noticed it, I've noticed it.
Lawrence Holmes, put a star on it.
I have the driver in my bag. Today's the day for the driver.
Now watch this drive. Nice one, Lawrence.
How will we handle?
Greg Council joining us.
All right, that was fun.
Nico Horner.
It's good to be back. It's been a while.
Yeah, it has.
Missed your voice.
Oh, that's nice.
See?
You were supposed to follow that up with
Mr. Musk.
Picked off by Jalen Johnson. Touchdown.
Jalen, this is Lawrence Holmes. Jalen, are you muted?
He's muted.
Bringing your rookiness to me.
That's on me, man. That's on me.
Forget about it, cuz.
Bob Costas.
Matt, thank you very much. And Lawrence, stop dominating the conversation the way you have over the last several minutes, really.
Joe Buck.
This is a one-way relationship. I don't think I've ever asked anything of Matt. I think the last time I was in this imbalanced of a relationship,
yeah.
I married her.
Hey, man.
I don't care who they put on. Joe Buck's on, I turn the sound down.
Holy Chicago.
Everything's fine. Everything's fine. Lawrence, everything's fine. Matt, everything's fine. Tanny, everything's fine.
It's like doing radio, right? You're only as good as your teammates. So, you know, Tanny comes in and he's a magician with his sound. And then you guys come on and your guys' team is great there. That's why your show is good. Football is like that, too. You can't be good by yourself.
What I mean, goosebumps. Hell? Let's kick off this show with a bang.
I mean, let's go.
Welcome. It is the Spiegel at Home show. Sure, we only have 90 minutes to hang out with you, but we know that the next 25 are going to be commercial free. So there's a lot of extra hang time. Missed that show. Alex is here. He has been running the board for Cubs.
Hang time. Reggie Theus?
Yeah, very good.
Thank you very much.
And a young Anthony Anderson back in the day. He was the three-point specialist, Teddy.
Yeah, no.
No?
I didn't have that for you. But thank you. Glad I asked. I didn't ask.
Do you know who the other coach was on hang time?
Dick Butkus?
My man!
Come on now.
I'm sorry. Anthony Anderson deserves an obligatory Herb Lawrence reference for Anthony Anderson being one of his greatest actors who ever lived. It's Sir Laurence Olivier, and I believe Marlon Brando, and then Anthony Anderson.
Oh, yeah. That's a list. That reminds me of Caleb Williams' movie list. You
that's
know?
Right. F1 is right up there with
Goodwill Hunting and The Godfather.
Yep. So, Alex is here because he's been running Cubs. Tanny is here. New whip. And that man is Hello. Matt Spiegel.
Hello. Yeah, let's lead where we should, okay? We can talk about the Cubs win and the bad Cubs week in a minute. But today, the SAP, the senior audio producer, has shown us his new automobile, the SAP-mobile. It rivals the Blackmobile, I got to say.
I think it's pretty great.
I mean, the Blackmobile that Lawrence has and drives and I've now ridden in is exquisite. But the SAPmobile, I mean, congratulations to Chris Tannehill, the Tannehill family, and anybody lucky enough to get a ride in the SAPmobile.
Yeah.
I hope it's me. Someday, I aim to get a ride in that.
Well, not going to be today because you're leaving early.
That's true. I am leaving
early. I mean, I guess the two of you could leave and then, you know.
That's right.
Sure. You know what? Sure. Come on, Steve. You ready
let's
to go?
You and me over at Wildfire.
They can fit me over there. It's going to be a big crowd over there tonight, you know.
You can interview Matt Shaw. Oh, wait. No, I'll interview Matt Shaw. I got a Q&A tonight for one of those baseball after darks. So, yeah, I'll scoot out of here about 5:40 or so I can make it over to Wildfire. I think, Lawrence, you can hold down the last 20.
Yeah, I think I can land the plane. There's a bunch of weird stuff that's on my mind that I've already thrown into the dock. There's, like, media stuff, and there's some cool WWE stuff that happened. And actually, I guess that's actually attached to the media stuff. Anyway, that'll be for later. But for now, things are okay the Cubs?
I mean, it's baseball. You get another chance. That's the best part of it. That's the best part of the whole damn thing. It's like life. As much as we've talked about how baseball is life, it's because it is. Sometimes you have a really crap-ass week, and this has been a truly crap-ass week. There's broader issues to talk about with that. But today was really nice. It was a nice day. Out there, I was talking to some people who were there who said that the vibes and the body language of the team was a hell of a lot better today than it was last night. I thought the crowd chanting PCA after he had struck out in 11 of his 15 at bats, and they were up 4-0 in the seventh. And
we're still with you, is what they're saying.
Right? That was kind of lovely.
Yes, I agree.
Like it had Trey Turner vibes. Remember when the Phillies crowd helped turn Trey Turner's season around a couple years ago?
I think that Cubs fans have been really appreciative of the player and person that PCA has been the last couple of years. And, you know, he shows them a lot of love,
yeah,
and they showed it back. And I agree with you. I thought that was a nice moment today.
Because it takes a village to feel the positivity that is demanded on a baseball season. And sure looked like that ball club has been struggling to feel it. I thought Craig Counsell did a nice job today. He's been aggressive with shuffling things up at the top of the order. Justin Turner in the two hole.
How about that?
As a contact bat. Who has great bat control, is willing to go the other way after Nico gets on and they do the hit and run, which we were calling for yesterday, man. You got to try and be aggressive when you can. That worked perfectly. Second baseman came over to cover. Turner shot it right in there. They had first and third. That led to the first run on a sac fly.
Here's why it was okay for you to go to the movies last night. Because had we had a full show today, we would have been talking about Craig Counsell making the move to pull Shota out of the game and it being a horrible mistake. And today he makes a really good move. And so it's like, okay, like I actually have no issues with him doing that.
Last night
I did go a little early, felt a little early, but he was at 92 pitches. So I got it and I was like, ooh, Craig, if this goes bad. And then it did. And then you get the redemption for Kittredge today, where he has the immaculate inning today. Like, there's a lot of cool stuff to have. But still, to look up this morning and go, oh, the Cubs are four games back, and this is the farthest back that they have been all season long, is striking.
Oh, it was. And last night was bleak, man. Like, there was plenty of good today. Seiya Suzuki looked really good today. Hit the ball hard three times and then had a terrific at bat, drawing a walk after those three times that he hit it hard. But he got the night off last night. But yeah, I mean, the vibes were horrendous last night. Talking to people who were at the ballpark and other people just watching on TV, you could see, and I was reminded of Bob Brenly back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
This is a dead-ass team, Brenly famously said when Zambrano and Derek Lee had gotten in each other's face on the south side. Didn't that look like a dead-ass team?
This has been a dead-ass team for the better part of 3 months to start this season.
Long season. I almost thought we had a long ball during this interview.
I want to see some home runs. I'm looking at the pregame stats. I'm seeing this guy from Cincinnati's getting the most home runs. Come on, let's go.
Coach, you got to look at the flags. That's really what's going on here.
It's Dave Watson.
He doesn't want to hear it. Elise is trying to talk to him about how Wrigley Field plays, and Coach doesn't want to hear it. Not a damn word. They promised him a win as they introduced that his marquee show is going to be back this year. He was promised a win. He didn't come out there to lose.
He had notes in his hand, too.
He always has notes.
It reminded me.
Him and Ozzy, they always have like a little folded up piece of paper of notes.
Or was it a hanky? No, it was probably notes.
It could have been a hanky because I think Coach was bleeding. Like, if you go back and look, I think his elbow was bleeding.
Is he running drills up in the suite up there? What's going on?
Hey,
got a seal here and a seal here.
We know that yesterday's practice was real physical up at Hallis Hall. Maybe Coach got up in there.
Pads he was on popping. The sled. He had to be. Can't you just imagine him there at practice?
Actually, that was
right in the middle on the sled.
That was a dessert cart, actually.
Whatever. Alex, he was still on it.
I don't have to imagine it because I saw it. He wasn't on the sled, but he might as well have been. Coach was. Because I was. Speaks. I was looking forward to like watching practice with Coach.
Yeah.
And I was like, where is he? And I was like, oh, there he is, right in the middle of drills.
I'm picturing Wani in the suite last night. He sees the dessert cart coming up the hallway and he's like, that looks like a blocking sled. I'm going to get on. I know what to do with this. I'm going to get on that thing.
He's a very physical performer. And as someone who acted as the dummy on the show with him, there would often be segments where I would get turned into into a player and moved.
Dave, your hand is in the cookie dough. Get your hand yes. out of the cookie dough. I got to grab onto something. Come on. I need a little purchase. Here, he's trying to turn the dessert cart into a blocking sled.
At least let me show you what he did with Leon Lett. And he draws up the old Leon Lett disguise blitz.
He does that type of stuff all the time. Every now and again,
Coach,
you do the TV show and you look over and he's drawing something up and you're like, what? He's like, well, let me explain. This is what they need to do. And then you're like, you learn something. That's why he's great.
Elise, just hit me right here in the confetti cake. Right here. Just lean into the confetti cake. Blast away.
And the thing is, you better be careful with Elise talking that nonsense.
Oh, dude, yeah.
That's a physical player right there.
That's a big-time athlete.
Damn right.
That's
a Hall of Famer.
That is a Cornell Hall of Famer.
It's a Hall of Famer.
Damn right. She knows.
Knock your ass right over.
right over. Oh, man. I realized, though, last night, Lawrence, after that game, when it was so bleak and so dark, who I was angry at. And I realized who I was angry at, and I was...
Spoiler alert, it's me.
It's Jed. Oh. It's Jed Hoyer.
No.
I feel like, and from the moment the extension came out, and you and I processed it in real time... With what I thought was an hour of pretty compelling radio as you and I were breaking it down with the callers, kind of talking it out. And what I realized I felt last night is that Jed sold his aggression to his bosses in the form of an extension. He sold his aggression away because the timing of that extension was fascinating. There's caution all around him. You know, there's caution... And we've known this in the front office, in ownership or safety or conservatism or however you want to call it, a desire to extend horizons and be competitive for as long as you can. Jed is the one who's always been aggressive. Remember laughing about it with Carter a couple years ago that Jed wanted to bring up Cade Horton and make him a reliever, you know, late in the season. Just go for it. And here we were in a lame duck year. He trades for Kyle Tucker. And the roster churn of the first several months that we saw.
I mean, we could literally go back to last year and talk about the aggression of firing David Ross and then going to get Craig Counsell. Like, that's an aggressive move.
It's all showing you a guy who decided, yep, I do want to win a damn World Series. And then the extension comes, and then the deadline comes, and that deadline was deflating. It was flat out deflating to the fan base. Everybody knew they needed starting pitching, and they got one back-end depth starter, an injury-prone guy whose velocity was waning, and then it blew up in his face on top of it all. But I think it was deflating to the room. Not that they will cop to it, but how could it not be? And when you see the dead-ass team that it has been, again, today was great. Okay, but I'm talking from the perspective of last night and the week that has been. It's the culmination of a terrible week, and I truly believe that the caution of the front office of the deadline left a mark on this group, and that's on Jed.
I don't know if I want to go as far as you do on this, because there is the opposite. There is the idea of we didn't need any help. There's the idea of those guys being like, we've been the best team in the National League for quite a while with Justin Steele gone, with Shota Imanaga gone for 2 months, and we've still been the best team. We've had the best offense for a long time. So I get what you're saying, and I can absolutely see that like perception of this thing was supposed to be a little bit more aggressive, and if you the type of message that you send by getting Justin Verlander, for example, or Sandy Alcantara.
Or two guys at the very least. They got one guy. They got one guy who was a back-end depth starter when you know they needed either two or a high-end dude who was healthy and rolling.
Yeah.
And they didn't do either of those things.
We should listen to Jed talk about the Soroka injury in a little bit, but I could also understand like that group being like, we don't need anything else.
But you look around and many other teams knew they needed other things and had dudes who sold out to go for it. Dave Dombrowski kickstarted the Twins fire sale by saying, I'm going to give you two guys, Eduardo Tate, the catcher, and Mick Abel, the pitcher, and you're going to give me Joan Duran. And he got him. And the Phillies team knows that their boss is going to go out and do whatever the hell he can to try and arm them to win a freaking World Series. And this whole group looking as dead as they've been, and we have felt it with the fans, and I have felt it, the deflation and the change because of the lack of aggression at that deadline. And now, if anything, the team and the manager are going to have to gather themselves and rally against the lack of aggression.
That's it's a lot of pressure that gets put on the shoulders of Craig Counsell, but he is the highest paid manager in the game, so it goes with the territory a little bit. You have to work some devil Cubs magic here, like the Brewers are doing up in Milwaukee. And I think Craig is capable of that, and I think that he's trying to do it. It's like, okay, I have a bunch of guys slumping, a bunch, and I've got to figure out how to give each of them what they need. This guy might need a day off. This guy might need a day off. Mm-hmm. If I sit this guy down, I might lose him for a while. Like, he's got to manage all of that stuff. And I think that with the slumping guys, I don't know what's going on with Kyle Tucker. And we'll delve into that a little bit later on in the show. But figuring out what to do with PCA, because he did not, coming out of the All-Star break, Craig did not want to sit PCA. He was like, I want to play him every day. But that's another guy where you're like, you're still trying to figure out what his actual player profile is, and he's got to do that. Seiya goes from leading the league in RBIs to going to sleep for 3 weeks offensively.
We've seen Seiya slump and go bad and turn his season around, and maybe we saw it again with just one night off and a really, really good day today.
Couple of good at-bats for Seiya.
Yeah, but three times he hit it over 100 miles an hour and then had the real good walk after that. So it's certainly possible. But yeah, pressure's on Craig Counsell to do the most with this, because that team that he left is just an absolute beast. They don't lose. They don't lose. They're National League Tampa Bay. They're a beautiful, efficient baseball machine.
Are we at the point where the average Cub fan, with a night off, knowing that the Brewers are playing against Atlanta, does the average Cub fan now tune in to Brewers games?
It's a great question.
And try and find some Brewers games to be anxious about?
Did you hear our Bruce Levine in post-game on the Cubs radio network ask Justin Turner if they're watching the Brewers? It's a nice win today. It's a 6-0 win. And I completely understand Bruce's question in post, because the Brewers are looming over this whole thing. You might be fighting for a wild card. That might be what your season looks like. But that 5-game series starting August 18th is a big, big, big deal.
Yeah, August 18th, big day. Big day for this show.
My guy Kurt came over the house and we practiced the anthem today.
All right.
Just to get it locked back in. You know what I mean?
You got to lock it back in.
Yeah.
You got to remember the arrangement. Would you like to hear Jed talk about the Soroka thing?
Please.
This is Jed talking about Michael Soroka going out there, throwing two innings, having low velo, and now being on IL.
We make bets on human beings, and sometimes they work out. And obviously, in this case, it doesn't mean that, like I said, I haven't gotten a full report yet, but obviously disappointed. We did a lot of due diligence. We did a ton of research, and, you know, if it doesn't work out, that's on me. That's the job.
Is the MRI like as clean as you would imagine for a pitcher? You know, normal.
There's never been a
right.
There's no clean MRIs.
As clean as you would imagine.
As I would imagine.
Well, I'm saying, was it the normal?
No, 6-year-old. I mean, obviously he's a major league pitcher. I think, you know, but yeah, no, we felt comfortable. Obviously, we felt comfortable enough to make the deal given the MRI. And he made his neck, you know, he continued pitching, and that's pretty indicative of how the MRI looked.
So, when he said he reared back a little bit last night, you think it happened in that moment?
I don't know exactly. I mean, I'm not sure. I you do wonder if, you know, you always wonder whether extra adrenaline and being in a new place or something like that, but it doesn't matter. Ultimately, it happened, and like I said, it's, you know, my responsibility.
That's not the first day of a homestand. That's not the day of the deadline. That's an interesting time for Jed Hoyer to go out and make himself available. Props for that. He didn't have to do that.
Correct. It's a good way to try and do business, is to go out there and be like, hey, that's your man's. your man's went out there and hurt himself. And there were concerns from a lot of people before you made the trade for your man's.
Yeah.
And then your man's was saying it was because of some medication that he was taking. And hopefully all of this is just there is a little bit of inflammation and he's going to be able to make a couple of starts for you down the stretch.
You know, and we've talked about it in many different forms in sports, your job as a team executive is often to wear it and speak it well and deflect if need be, or just flat out be out there and take it. And if you're not good at it, it can come off like Arturis Karnišovas.
Yeah, you were reading my mind because I was thinking that's an organization where that's going on as we speak.
And if you're good at it, if you're great at it, you come off like Theo Epstein. If you're good at it, you come off like Jed Hoyer. I think Jed's very, very good at it, at wearing the limitations. And there are people who will tell you that he does wear the limitations. This is why I started where I started, that he's an aggressive dude by nature. And suddenly he wasn't as aggressive as he had been, as signs had been pointing to. And I have to assume that the extension was part of that. And it cast kind of an unfortunate pall over the week to me.
To go back to your point about the clubhouse, and there's probably some truth to it. The only thing that makes me want to push back is that clubhouse can't be the same clubhouse that's like, man, it's so good that we have a guy like Justin Turner in here. Or we have a guy like Dansby Swanson who's won a World Series.
Yeah.
Like all of these guys that are really important to the culture of this particular Cubs team, if at the trade deadline they don't necessarily get the help that we think they need, I would be upset if that group kind of emotionally folded.
I can't say emotionally fold, but I can say damaged emotionally. That's what it looked like, and it's been a week. And now it's their job to rise up with all those people that you're talking about. You know what it is in life when you got to work to get in a good headspace.
Yep.
That's what they got to do as a team. And that's what Craig Counsell has to do as a manager and as a boss. He's like, you know, and some managers do goofy stuff like petting zoos, and some managers get magicians, and some managers shake up the order like freaking crazy, like Craig did. And they do
some managers
runs.
Get a party bus and yeah. say, you know what, boys, we're going out tonight.
We got a night off tomorrow. Let's go do karaoke and get hammered.
And we're going to hang out, and we're not going to St. Louis tonight.
Yeah.
We'll go tomorrow.
Calling an audible. And if a manager doesn't do it, sometimes players do it. John Lester, it was famous for doing that kind of stuff. Maybe it's Nico, but I bet it's Craig, who's very connected to these guys. But like, they got a job to do, and sometimes you have to do it in the face of your front office.
There was a moment last night where you see, after the home run, where you see Craig in the dugout, and he's frustrated. You know, he's like, managers have to manage with their gut a bit, and I know that. That was what, for Shota, it was one of the top five as many pitches that he's thrown so far this season. I think maybe the fourth most pitches that he's thrown this season. Mm. And you're like, ugh, I needed this to go right. Like, if you're Craig, you're like, this was a...
Yeah.
I needed this to go right for these guys.
He said it in postgame that Shota's velocity was real good. It was a great performance. And you know what it is, man? It's the offense. I mean, that's what it's been. The numbers are bananas.
It's the McCaskies.
I mean, Kyle Tucker, the OPS is 696 since the break. Carson Kelly, 602. Dansby, 518. Michael Bush, 505. Saya, 498. These are last night. These are as of last night, before today's 11-hit explosion. And that does qualify as an explosion. A lot of good line drives out there today, not just the three bombs.
But the Carson Kelly thing was predictable, and we predicted it. No one should have expected Cubs catchers to hit as well as they did in the first half of the season. That was fool's gold. And as seasons go on, most catchers, not all, but most catchers are exhausted. And they end up not having great second halves offensively. So that to me was always icing.
Yeah, well, Miguel Amaya hopefully will come back soon. And Miguel Amaya had shown you lots of signs, and he rested Carson Kelly and vice versa. And that was working really, really well.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we do need to discuss the Kyle Tucker thing, and we will inside of the 5 o'clock hour. Also on the show today, coming up next, as a matter of fact, the quarterback speaks. We will hear from Caleb Williams about this offense, working with Ben, and the mechanical changes that he has to undergo to run this offense. A little bit of Bears thrown in with a lot of Cubs talk. Spiegel and Holmes here with you until 6 on The Score.
Spiegel and Holmes, afternoons on The Score.
Caleb, have you ever heard this before?
That
there's never been a 4,000-yard passer? I don't know if that's newsworthy, if that's breaking. Has anybody ever thrown that at you?
Breaking news, PSA. There's never been a 4,000-yard passer. No, I have, and that's a goal of mine. You know, why not strive and shoot for the moon? Yeah. And that, you know, that's one of the things. And I want to be that, you know, that guy to be able to do it. I want to be that guy to be able to go out there and, you know, have success as Bears QB and be successful when I'm out there playing and, you know, with this team. And, you know, that's the, you know, one of the biggest parts is being able to keep us on the field, which is, you know, taking my completions.
Yep.
And then, you know, getting the ball and delivering an accurate ball to my guys. And it doesn't matter if it's a deep shot, intermediate, or short game, delivering a nice accurate ball so that, you know, the playmakers that we've drafted, gotten free agent or whatever case may be, can go make plays.
Yank tickets later on, let me know.
More on Caleb in just a second. We do have tickets, Coach, and we are giving away Black Keys No Rain, No Flowers Tour with special guest Gary Clark Jr. That's September 3rd at Huntington Bank Pavilion at Northerly Island in the city. You can call right now and be the sixth caller, 312-540-0670, and we will hook you up. Tickets are also available at livenation.com.
It's a very, very cool double bill of some blues rock-influenced music of the moment. That's some good stuff. It's a great time for concerts in this city, man.
It really is.
I'm going to see Wilco at the Salt Shed on Sunday night. Very excited about that. Have you been to the Salt Shed yet?
I've been by it, but I haven't seen anything in it.
It's pretty cool. There's no salt left, to my knowledge. They've taken all of the salt out, I do believe, but it's quite a complex that they have built.
Studs has been there a couple times, right?
Yeah.
He's seen a couple of concerts Studs over
has.
There.
I saw the Black Pumas there, I think it was a couple years ago now, but it's a really cool venue. Yeah,
I saw Dawes there inside. I don't think I've been to one outside yet. So this
outside's pretty cool. I saw King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard outside. It was pretty dope.
That's his group. Black Pumas was here.
It was that weekend. Yeah.
I walked in on them and sat for like 10 minutes and watched them do their thing.
Yeah, wife and I had already bought tickets, and then I saw them over at the performance stage. I was like, all right, do we still have to go to the concert?
Dude, when there's a band you like there, I mean, I'll never forget. I didn't see him, but Brandon McCaffrey did. Chris Cornell of Soundgarden playing solo acoustic on that tiny little stage right down the hall.
And he was amazing.
I don't know what I was doing, but I should have been there.
Lead singer of the Black Pumas shook everyone's hand that was in the crowd
that's
day. Lawrence, I think you remember. So it's like, well, it only goes down from here going to see them live anywhere else.
Like, I mean, so I remember one day I was walking by, I was like, oh, that's Britt Daniel from Spoon. What the hell's going on?
Remember
here?
When Perry Farrell was walking
Perry
around here?
Perry Farrell! Porno for Pyros was there.
I walked past Brittany Howard and I was like, I love you.
She's badass.
She is.
Yeah.
But she is.
She did the thing on SNL, on the SNL 50, where it was like, it was her. Because, I'm
mixing
confused.
People up?
Yeah. I'm mixing,
mixing up with Britney Spears?
No. Nope. I'm mixing her up with Ron Howard.
With Adina Howard?
That's understandable. And Jordan Howard. And we're back. See that? Brought it back around to the Bears. Let's go.
All right. Brings us back to the quarterback of the Bears. And, I highly recommend that you go watch the full interview. Stacey Dales put it up on her Instagram. By the way, Stacey's dope. You should be following her anyway if you're a Bears fan.
Dude, it's Stacey Dales being local and being on the NFL Network and mixing those things has created a lot of compelling stuff. She's the one last year who learned that there was no first 15 of Shane Waldron's offensive set.
Yeah. She's dope. So you should go look at the whole thing. But we wanted to share a couple of things with you here as you're listening or watching us on Twitch. We are on Twitch.
Hello.
Hi. How is everyone? We appreciate everyone who's in the mob who is watching and, and commenting on what's going on the show.
How are we doing today?
Well, why don't we ask Caleb a little bit about that? Let's find out. We've heard everyone talk about how Caleb looks inside this offense. This is how he feels inside this new offense.
In your words, Caleb, how much have you been given from Ben? Like, give us an idea of the quantity of this offense that he's given you.
He gives, let's say it's been a lot, which as it should be. It's training camp. We're going to test limits. Our longest play calls to our shortest play calls, and even, the longest play calls with different checks, and also having different checks after, you get a check. There's different checks within the play, and it's been, we've had a couple of those, and he's just been adding more and more throughout time, and it's been fun. It's been good. It's been challenging. It's been frustrating when you don't get it, but that's what practice is for.
Caleb, give me a long play call. Ooh, give me an example of them.
I don't want to give up my tricks in the word, because some of the words we actually use when we get up to the line.
Oh, you got formation. You got
so yeah. So okay. So we'll go a motion. We'll go a formation.
Yep.
We'll go motion, which is sometimes a shift or a motion.
Okay.
And mainly shift. So we'll shift, and then we'll have the formation. Then we'll have the motion, and then we'll have the protection, and then we'll have the play. We'll have a kill or things like that, and then another play behind it.
And a tag.
It's fun.
All right. Hold on. That's a lot. Now, we've all known that it's a lot, but great job by Baldy pinning him down and finding a way to get him to say. So that's all the different factors that are in the play call. You got a motion, you got a formation, you got a play call, and then you got a kill, and then you got another thing. And so there's six things that he's getting in there, and they all mean something big.
Alex, see if you can find a Jared Goff play call for us, because
better yet, there's one. Did you guys see the video? I just thought about this now. The video of Tua with the media earlier this week, where he asked the media, he recites a play, and he asked the media to recite it, verbatim in response, just mimic the whole thing word for word, and they couldn't do it.
Tua is sassy. I know that we use that word for
pejoratively.
Yeah, and I might be using it pejoratively. That is,
I like that though.
Feisty.
The difference is that you understand the concept. So if you understand the concepts, it's easier to understand how the play is constructed and how it should be called. The call and response of an 8-word play call is difficult if you're just trying to listen and repeat it back. Mm-hmm. It has to be all of the things, all of the types of learning that go on, like seeing it, being able to hear it, being able to understand it. A lot of modalities going on there, not just call and response.
Good stuff.
And a lot of times, offensive players are listening for their specific job that they're doing inside of a play call like what Ben Johnson has.
How is it with this new group up front, specifically Drew
They've
Dolman?
Been awesome.
Drew Dolman, there's no competition at center, which is vital, I have to imagine, for
yeah,
you.
Yeah, no, it's been awesome. I can go and, even today, we got to a point where we actually had a long play call, and I messed up the long play call. And, we end up, getting to the line, we got a play call out, got up to the line. And it's just communication between Drew and I of, figuring out exactly, if the play clock's winding down and, we can't get the play call, which happens a lot more than people think. Mm-hmm. On game days, we get to the line, we get a play, and we get the snap going on a certain cadence and things like that, especially when the clock is winding down. So it's just small things like that, and it's been great having Drew and Jonah and Joe and Ozzie and Braxton and Darnell and Karan and different things like that. So it's like I said, it's been awesome. It's been fun.
You mentioned the word frustration, you strive for perfection. I mean, at your level, that's what we've seen over the years. How do you self-correct? Because Ben's pretty tough on you.
Yeah. I think even now, to the point, obviously Ben's going to get on me and get on everybody, because that's what Ben is striving for. And he's, this is his offense and his team. And so he's striving for that, and we're all striving for that, because that's the standard for us. But, through OTAs and then getting to this point, it's been cool to kind of watch. It's been maybe a little bit less Ben. Obviously, Ben is going to step in and say and do whatever he has to do as our coach. But it's been a little bit less Ben and more players that's not good enough. Let's re-rack it. Defense Giants offense when we're out there. Let's re-rack it. Let's get back in the huddle. Let's do it all again from the top. And it's been great to watch that because those are the best teams.
Love that. What do you love most about Ben's offense?
I would say his creativity. And then also, like you saw today, Ben goes by these two simple things, smash mouth football, old rule, smash mouth football, and then new and innovative football. Yeah. So that's, you know, to be able to, you marry those two. And I think Ben's been able to do that for, you know, past years. And it's been fun to watch. And now, you know, it's fun to be a part of.
Man, that was really, really good stuff. That is calm, Caleb, just talking ball. And I don't know whether it's Baldy or it's also because he's seen Stacy around for a couple of years now and knows that he can trust them both. But, like, him describing the offense was good. And you know what I really liked, Lawrence? Him saying, like, oh, yeah, and Ben's going to do his thing and be, like, you know, be very bossy and coach you hard because it's his offense. Like, there's a little bit of an understanding on a human level of what Ben is and who he's doing. Like, so they're going to have to go levels with each other, and he's got an understanding of that, and that's cool.
Yeah, it is. I like him talking about the marriage concept of the smash mouth football and innovation.
Yeah, that's
and
the sexiest football stuff, right?
Look, I am telling you, like, there's so much cool stuff out there. Like, after watching quarterback, I kind of went down a rabbit hole, and then we had started talking about whether they were going to be a wide zone team or if they were going to be a gap team. And the truth is, they're going to be both, and they'll figure out how to work both concepts. And I think that it has to do with who is on their roster. But seeing them also be able to use the wide zone scheme to then open up dagger concepts in their pass game is so sexy. Mm-hmm. Some of the stuff that they were able to do with Sam Laporta, where Laporta would be at the end of the line of scrimmage, obviously, and then find his way in some of those concepts of replacing blockers who were out on their zone block, and him coming back to the middle of the line and picking up extra rushers. There's a lot of sexy in this offense, and if they can even get a glimpse of it, it can be beautiful. And we saw that's why, like, to me, it's we talk about Jared Goff and Caleb being more athletic and maybe more special. I don't think he has to be. I think that he can play it like Jared Goff for a while, and this offense could explode. He doesn't have to even – I hope that he doesn't think that he has to play Superman.
Oh, no, he doesn't. And having the smash mouth concepts in there, mm-hmm. You know, Lawrence, there's some bad teams out there. There's some bad offenses out there that aren't going to put up points on a Dennis Allen defense. They're going to be able to win some games just playing smash mouth and playing good defense. You know, like, they're not going to have to explode for 35 points and 500 yards of offense or 450 yards of offense against everybody. And they might not be able to, at least for a while. So, and that's the thing. We talked about it yesterday. Ben Johnson's Lions teams ran the ball more than like 23 other teams that we had looked at last year.
And the things that they are able to do off of their run game, and if he is on time, the things that they will be able to do with this offense could be so much fun. And when you start thinking about the elements of this offense, of adding someone like Luther Burden to an offense that already has someone like DJ Moore, both guys being excellent at run after the catch, that allows for something. A story that I hope that we could spend some time on it tomorrow. Roma Dunze's ascension, hopefully, in being this team's, like, number one wide receiver is something that I'm looking forward to, because Ben is now a couple of times, like, called him out by name and be like, you know, he's doing a lot of great stuff for us.
Yeah, so why? I mean, we can get into it tomorrow, but, like, that's not just because of his physical profile. That's because of his work ethic and obvious dependability.
If you go back to last year's Hard Knocks off-season stuff, not the Bears craziness, but the Giants. And Rome with the Giants, when he went to go meet with them, and everyone, Dable was like, you know, this guy's really, really smart. So you add that to some of the physical gifts that he has, and now being in a place where I think it could be appreciated more. And I think that with Keenan Allen now back with the Chargers, because Keenan became kind of a safety net for Caleb last year, and a good one. Like, if I had Keenan Allen, I would also throw him the ball. But now there's an opportunity for Rome to absolutely flourish. And he can be like, hey, I am this team's number one, or I can be this team's number one. Mm-hmm. I can go out there, and maybe he's not the same, like he's not built up like Amon-Ra, but I do think he's got a lot of the toughness of Amon-Ra St. Brown. And I don't know if Ben sees DJ Moore as Amon-Ra or if he sees Burden as Amon-Ra.
Well, Amon-Ra, you know, I could see him seeing any number of those guys into different aspects of what Amon-Ra is. Like, I could see DJ Moore utilized like Amon-Ra. I could see Burden utilized, you know, like Jameson Williams. But what he's got with Amon-Ra is the dependability and the profile and the work ethic,
yes,
that he might not have with DJ Moore, frankly.
Well, I don't know about work ethic with DJ. I wouldn't put that in question.
All right, maybe that brush is too broad.
I
am in the Terry Bors seat. He owned the broad brush. He would bring it sometimes. It's left here. Every once in a while, I pick it up, the brush, and it's a little too broad.
I think that DJ was frustrated, and he's been frustrated for his whole career of not winning. And then clearly you had some clods in here last year, some dopes in here last year.
Clods?
Yeah, you never heard that one?
Of course I have. I love it.
So I'm sure that he's like, again, things are going to be bad again.
Clods.
With me in this thing. All right, anyway, let's get back to Caleb.
Yeah, let's hear the stuff about being under center, because that's a big, big deal. You can do a lot more in play action, a lot more in play calls if you can get your timing down under center. Does he like it?
I actually enjoy being under center because it one, it messes with the defense, and then two, it gives me more ability to take a couple shots.
Yeah,
well, which is always fun. Yeah. So you draw the defense in, we run the ball well, and that starts up front. That also starts with me and my communication and getting the guys going and my cadence and things like that. But you know, the guys up front, it always starts with them. It's always going to end with them. And so getting off the ball, showing like it's run. Everything looks the same. Everything looks like it's a run. Mm-hmm. Play action. Everything looks like run. Keeper. Everything looks like run. It is a run. Mm-hmm. So now you're getting these big plays and tiring the defense out and doing all these different things, and then it's like, oh, now you got a shot and you take it. And you know, when you don't have the shot, protect the football, take your checkdowns, and move on to the
Well, I feel like in this league last year, okay, we saw so much too high shell,
yep,
across the league.
Yeah.
It was hard to take shots.
Yep.
Like, they were taking it away from you, but the way that you get them out of it is to run it.
Run the ball.
You run them out of it.
Yep.
You know, so I think, always think, you know, DeAndre, Rashawn, like these guys, they don't mind being 8 yards deep,
nope,
and taking it like that. And rather than just being a point of entry back in, yep, a shotgun situation.
Yeah. No, they've been great. Kyle, Roshan, and obviously Dre, they've been great. We're working on our paths daily, making sure that we're perfect so everything looks exactly the same. Yep. Because everything, you know, if we have the run looks, the run look the same as the play action, and the keeper, it opens all three for each other. And so being able to have all those things look the same is what we've been practicing, what we've been getting on ourselves about. And it's been fun to watch and fun to be a part of.
I just got a wave of optimism listening to that guy just now. Just because, like, you add what... You know, I forget where, I think it was on that Athletic pod with Robert Mays, when he was talking about, they were talking about how for a guy who took 68 sacks, he actually showed pretty good pocket presence.
Yeah.
You know, and it's sort of counterintuitive.
It made sense when they explained it.
So, look, I think that's the number one most important thing for a quarterback in an NFL where they will find ways to attack you. And like, do you have good pocket presence? Can you keep your cool and make plays? And he's going to learn to keep his cool and stay in that pocket and make plays, hopefully. But he also has the intellect to have a full understanding of what's being asked to him and to be working his ass off to grasp it. And like we were saying with Leisure yesterday, with nothing around him last year in terms of structure.
He had nothing. He was teaching himself to play NFL football last year.
And he had 3,600 yards and under 10 interceptions. And
now he's got a coach that actually knows what he's doing with offensive football and is going to hold him accountable.
And he's hearing him talk, the understanding of what he's working on. Like, it may take him a little while to have it all down and everything, but even to have an understanding of that. I got hit with a wave of optimism listening to this.
And let me just say this. This is a... I don't need Caleb to throw for 4,000 yards. I know that he has that in the back of his mind, and he wants to get that thing off of the history of the franchise. I don't need him to do that. I need him to be on time. I need him to make the throws. I don't need him to even be Superman. I don't need him to be Jaden Daniels. All I need him to do is just really accept the coaching. And because this is a big change, and I know we talk about it every other day when it comes to Caleb. What they are asking him to do is so different from what it is that he's done his entire football career. Going back to Pop Warner, this is a guy that has been taking snaps from shotgun or from pistol. And I know there's a little bit of that when I think his freshman year or something like that in high school where he was taking snaps from center. It's a different type of action, and it's a different responsibility. And quite honestly, that thing that we were talking about yesterday, it's a different threat level for a quarterback taking snaps from under center than it is from shotgun.
Which is why he's got to play, so he can sense that peril and realize what the timing is.
There's a sense of safety when you're a shotgun quarterback or a pistol quarterback, because you can go, all right, I can always see the defense. And when you're doing it from under center, there are little snapshots that you have to take as you're in your drop, and you have to trust that everyone is doing what they're supposed to do. It's going to be a big difference for Caleb. So as long as he accepts that and he leans into it, I think he's going to be fine. And honestly, I think he only needs to be fine at the start of this. And then as he gets more comfortable, he can let all the cool stuff happen.
I like it. I like it. We got to talk about Kyle Tucker a little bit, because he's been out there talking about a slump, and he also did the extremely fast interview thing with Elise Menneker on Marquee Pregame today.
By design. It's not he didn't run away from the interview. It's by design that it's fast.
Yeah.
I didn't want to like cast aspersions on Kyle that he was like...
No. Operation Woo King Tuck got emboldened a little bit.
Oh, dear God. All right, we'll explain how Spiegs has made it all the way back around to this thing happening next here on The Score.
Spiegel and Holmes.
Matt Walsh, who you know from all sorts of movies.
Matt, thanks so much for joining us. We appreciate you jumping on with us.
Hello, Matt.
Uh-oh, Cylon's got him.
They got him.
Matt, thanks for joining us. We're really sorry about the technical issues here, man.
Thank you for having me, and turns out all those layoffs at the Score IT department didn't pay off.
They really didn't.
They really didn't.
No. You just got a lot more real than you bargained for. We are going in the emotional tank for the rest of the interview.
Afternoons on the Score.
Lawrence.
Make me a bicycle, clown!
We don't even have time to make a lot of bicycles, but I appreciate the hat tip to the old solo show that Tanny used to run back in the day. So it's not that weird of a thing for me to be in a room, him being in charge of all of the sound and it sounding great until I open my mouth. There are a couple of things that I want to touch on. One of them I think I'm going to keep in my pocket, and that's walking people through the whole ESPN NFL media thing, because there's a lot there. But I can't tell you this for sure, but I'm pretty certain that Red Zone's going to be fine. I know that everyone was worried about that, but I think it's going to be fine. I do have a beef with ESPN that's perfect for the Spiegel and Holmes audience and the Score listener. This morning, finishing up the workout, do a little light cardio at the end.
You got some beefs.
I do have a beef. Do a little light cardio. I jump on the elliptical for 30 minutes or whatever after I'm done lifting. And I usually watch SportsCenter. And the late night / early morning SportsCenter is really good. The two guys that do, I love Gary Streisky. I think he's really talented. Like, and their chemistry on that SportsCenter is solid. So they're doing their 50 states in 50 days thing. And it's been fun. Friend of the show, my friend Shay Pepler, has been doing a lot of them, and she went to Wisconsin, which hurt her soul because she had to put on Packers gear and do the Lambeau leap. She's been to Maine, and she's been shucking oysters and all this other stuff. And today was Illinois. So basically what they're doing is they're putting a spotlight on all of the sports activity that goes on in a state. Now, the weird thing is in some of the states, they have just – like they did Arizona – And instead of talking about great Arizona sports moments, they talked about other teams that played in Arizona. And I'm like, dude, there's between U of A, ASU, the Diamondbacks, and the Cardinals, there's enough there alone. And that's beyond all the cool prep stuff and all the players that have come out of the state of Arizona. But that's neither here nor there. They did Illinois today. And you know me, as a White Sox fan, I am sitting there. And I'm like, okay, yeah, you're doing Illinois today, right? Now, I was hoping that they would broaden the scope because Illinois as a state has incredible history. The first Heisman Trophy is at the University of Chicago, down on the south side. The University of Illinois has Red Grange and all sorts of other stuff. The Bears didn't start in Chicago. They started in Decatur. And that's just a little bit. That's off the top of the dome. Before you even talk about the championships won. And so they went through the championships. They went through the championships. And guess who got left out? It won't
what
take
the
it.
Hell?
Yeah. Yeah. Tanny, they did the whole thing. And they were like, yeah, you know, look at the Blackhawks and all of their trophies that they won, those Stanley Cups that they won. And the Bears, they won Super Bowl 20. Remember that? And how about the Cubs breaking their drought?
Who are the Chicago White Sox?
Correct. And then you know what they did, Tanny? After they showed the Cubs and the Bears and Michael Jordan and the Blackhawks, they went to commercial after that.
Of course they did. It has to be intentional at this point. We just went through this when someone passed away and brought attention to this.
Yes. And I'm sitting there going, is anyone else watching this? Is this my own personal sports center where I'm getting trolled as a Southsider and culturally a White Sox fan? Am I getting trolled?
Is there a White Sox feature on our televisions we should be pressing the on button for?
Right.
Like the SAP, like is it an SOX feature?
We need
like,
to
make
do
sure
that.
It's enabled on your televisions.
It really bothered me, and I was like, oh, come on, man. There's no Chicagoans in Bristol now. The White Sox shouldn't be forgotten like that on purpose. How about this? We're going to give away something for you. Oh, well, that's right. We're not giving away. We've done all the giveaways. But we do need to... Wait, I'm lost. No, I'm not. I'm found now. I am found. Baseball fans, next Friday... It's casual Friday. August 15th from 7 till 9, you should go to Coombs Corner out in Lockport. If you haven't been, it's a really good place. You get to meet Ron Coomer, enjoy Yingling bucket specials, and score some Yingling swag. Don't miss the post-game party at Coombs Corner with Yingling. That's the oldest brewery in America.
That's how you do it.
Yes, it is, Coom. Stupid ESPN. Forgetting about the White Sox again. If you run into it, maybe I blacked out for a second, but there was one little five-second video of Luis Robert Jr. swinging a bat as they were promoing the segment. That's it. That's all they had. 2005 apparently didn't exist. Again. For Alex, for Tanny, for my partner Matt Spiegel, I'm Lawrence Holmes saying thank you so much for the love and support you show us every single day. We will do our best to return the favor tomorrow. Full boat show, 2 to 6 here on The Score.
Yeah, I'm sorry, guys. I got to go. I got something.